What is going on, y'all? And thank you all so very, very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And I'm not in here alone. Sitting in here discussing those things with large feet with me is Kyle Filson.
How's it going, folks? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studio enjoying a break in the heat.
Woohoo!
Finally rained here. I don't know how many days it's been since we've had some rain.
I should have looked that up.
But it rained good and it knocked the temperature way down. I mean, this morning the temperature was like 75 degrees. It was amazing because it's been like 108 here for, oh man, better than a month.
It sure seems, oh yeah, it sure.
There's fires everywhere. I mean, I saw there was a huge fire out of there off BB Field the other day.
Yeah.
There was a fire over there near Cool and Garner the other day. I mean, it's just everything's so dry. When I walk in my yard, you can hear it crunching.
Oh yeah.
There's a smooth path worn between my archery target and where I stand. Like it's a trail. It might take 2 or 3 years for that part of the yard to recover.
Right. Yes.
It's just, everything's just dead.
Yeah, there's no saving it. It's one thing for it to be hot and dry, but it's another thing when it's over 103 for weeks on end.
Yeah.
Like it's just, it's crazy. It is complete and utter madness. But we may be getting near the end of it, right? We're getting near the end of summer. Things are going to start popping out. Hopefully everybody that's in the cold is fixing to get some spring weather, and everybody that's in the summer is going to get a little fall.
Yeah,
we
man.
All get a little change.
The fall is a coming. I wasn't even aware. Time gets away from me. Saturday afternoon, I was working on the computer in the living room, and a Notre Dame football game came on. I'm like, holy crap. College football's back.
I played Navy.
That's right, the midshipmen. I didn't even know.
They were in Ireland, I believe.
I thought it was still a few weeks away, but apparently it's here among us. So I'm getting excited. The World Series will be soon. That's in the fall always, and ice hockey will be back.
It's like hockey's going to start, and he's fired up for hockey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Big plans this year. Big plans. What about you, man? What have you been up to?
Man, oh man, we're putting the final touches on my niece's place that we've been working on.
Get a drink here.
Doing a few things there, and that's about it. Actually enjoying some of the cooler weather, and yeah, that's about all. We were supposed to do a little vacation action, and the weather didn't work out, so we didn't go anywhere. So we've just been here tinkering and doing our stuff. So yeah, that's basically about it. Enjoying this cooler, rainy weather.
I'm getting ready for the Cryptid Conference, right?
Oh, I can't wait.
That's going to be here right very, very, very soon.
We'll get to hang out at the Dogman Conference, see everybody that's going to be there. Y'all come up, say hi. We'll visit. Try to stay out of trouble while we're there kicking around.
All the people that are giving the lectures, I like to hear these new stories that they've uncovered. Because, you know, just like us, lots of these authors, they get lots of emails sent to them. I mean, every time I run into Nick, he tells me 12 to 15 right? new encounters that he just hasn't written in a book yet.
Could you imagine, exciting. Like, the hard drive for his emails, like, it must physically have weight to it.
Yeah. Well, he writes a book like every other month.
Yes. Yeah. Like the stories he has is endless. The man's a treasure of stories.
Yeah, he's going to be competing with, what is it, Hubbard, the guy that wrote the most amount of books ever.
L. Ron Hubbard?
Yeah, Nick Redfern's closing in on him.
Maybe Nick will start his own religion, too.
Dude, I would join.
right? Exactly. Look, a lot of y'all that listen also hunt, as we do. So you know season's coming up. As we get into the fall, we know that hunting season's starting up. We've already had antelope season. Elk season's fixing to pop off. Dove season's fixing to kick off. Mule deer season. Whitetail season's right around the corner. Everything is building towards it. And of course, when that happens, people are in the woods. When people are in the woods, creepy and unsettling things can and do sometimes happen. I got a little story here for you, bud. Listen to this. You ever been to Idaho?
I never have.
It's beautiful. I've wanted to go. Never been.
Nope.
Right?
My
buddy Robbie lives up there. Everything looks awesome. Listen to this little story here. It says, as a city kid, I was lucky enough to have my parents relocate to northern Idaho when I was about 14. My parents separated shortly afterward. They didn't have anyone to teach me anything about the woods, but I did fall in love with these mountains. So I started to hunt when I was about 16. After I would go home, after a 26-mile bus ride from school, I had about 3.5 hours to hunt. I had a favorite spot along the lower North Fork River on the Tamarack Ridge, and at that time, there were small farms there. So one evening, while on one of my short hunts for white-tailed deer, I saw a group of three along a ridge. I could hear the deer moving through the brush ahead of me. I got down on my knees. They were ahead, looking under the brush halfway up the ridge. Then I started feeling fear welling up inside of me. So as I stood up and looked across the valley to the next ridge, which is only about 150 yards away, I saw what looked like a large man carrying a whole deer up the ridge at a very quick pace. I was amazed at how thick the body, the arms, and its legs were. Now, this Bigfoot covered the distance to the top in just a few minutes. As it crested the top, I then was able to see and was very acutely aware of the fear that was inside of me. I had trouble even controlling it. I checked my rifle to make sure it was loaded. I also carried a .357 Magnum revolver with me. I checked to see if it was loaded. I was feeling very inadequate for the situation I was in. I was suddenly aware that it was almost dark, so I started moving in the direction of my truck. I almost started to run, but when I would quicken my pace, the fear was almost uncontrollable. I felt like something was watching me, and I could swear I knew from what direction, and I could hear the brush cracking around me, but I don't know if any of this was related. When I reached the truck, I was afraid to put my gun down to unlock it. I thought if I could just get in the truck, I could settle down and get a hold of my emotions. I was sitting in this truck, still not wanting to settle down, and not settling down, and I got it started, pulled out on the dirt road that was along the river, headed out. The tightness in my chest started to ease as I drove down the road. I passed the bottom of the ridge where I had this encounter, and I stopped and looked up the little trail that led to the ridge trail. Immediately, the tightness returned, and I felt very vulnerable sitting in this truck. So I took off faster than I should, and shouldn't have been going that fast on the dirt road. When I got home, my mom asked what was wrong, and I just let her think that I was frustrated because I didn't see or get anything. I've never told anyone about it until my sons were 14 and 16. The young one believed me and had a hard time hunting by himself. When the first started getting into the woods, the older son wasn't or didn't say much about it. But the topic comes up after every hunting or during every hunting season in camp. I've never felt fear like I felt like that in my life, whether staring down the barrel of a gun as a police officer or trekking into the cave in the underground. Thanks.
Wow.
So let me ask you this.
Sure.
Could this have been simply the fact that a young man at the time, 16, was overwhelmed by what they just encountered?
Yeah.
What they had seen was overwhelming, right?
Mm.
You can't, it's almost like you're breaking down. It breaks everything, like we've talked about, that you have held true in your mind of this is the way the world works. Now something is in it that has caused it to fall apart. Or was there another one there? Was there another one there that, and it has somehow, these have an influence on you. Was there another one there? And that's what he was feeling. Was it within proximity that made him feel that way? Or do you think it was all something just in his head?
It very easily could just be in his head, right? I mean, you can freak yourself out. I've done it. You've done it.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing there, but you just start freaking yourself out, and then you start getting more and more terrified. Or his sixth sense was picking up on something, and there was something in the woods with him. Because people talk about, they've done studies where you can tell if someone's looking at you, you know?
Yeah.
Without you seeing them. Like, you can feel their gaze. Maybe there was something up there. That's why, man, when it comes to Bigfoot, I don't know that it's physical, right? Like, maybe it's more demonic or something, and it likes to prey on people. And then, of course, it feels your fear, which only makes it want to, you know, pursue you longer. It gets enjoyment somehow to tormenting you. I mean, that's the stories you hear about a lot of the fae and the tricksters that live in the woods, you know, and from different parts of the world, they all talk about the same thing, that it likes to play tricks on you and might take you to the fairy realm. And who knows? It's creepy. Speaking of creepy, check this out, Cam. This happened, it says it was July of 2012, and I was at my sister's house in Reedley, California, which is in Fresno County in the San Joaquin Valley. This is a residential neighborhood. That's where she lives. There's a river that is very close by, which is right next to a cemetery. Everyone was inside getting ready for bed, and I was in the backyard with my son. We were sitting, having a conversation about life and just looking up into the night sky. And I have to admit, I'm the type of person that is always looking up in the sky to try and find a UFO. But this night, I was just relaxing, looking upward. My son was talking, and then all of a sudden, in my right peripheral vision, I saw what I thought was a bird flying down towards the both of us. It looked like it had its wings spread open, like it was trying to land. There was a big palm-like tree in the distance, and in my mind, I thought it must be an owl. Now, these thoughts were quick. I turned my head in the direction of the thing to get a better look at it. What I saw was a translucent bird-like object. It was light in color. The translucence reminded me of a jellyfish. I stood up and yelled out, "What the heck is that?" We both stood up and my son yelled, "Where? Where?" I said, "It's right there." And I pointed towards the thing. It was about 30 feet off the ground. He finally caught a glimpse of it and just muttered in disbelief. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. After we stood up, the thing banked to the right. Then you could see it from its side. It looked like it was gliding. The backyard we were in was fenced and all the way around. There are no alleys in the neighborhood, so your neighbors are right over the fence. The thing glided around the perimeter of the fence and flew over the neighbor's backyard. The neighbor was directly behind my sister's yard. The really weird thing is that during the sighting, it looked like it was changing shapes as it went in the different directions. Like I said before, when I first saw it, it looked bird-like. Then, when it turned, it looked like an oval shape. As it went over the backyard, or the back neighbor's yard, it looked like something was hanging off its wings or sides. It was almost like ragged wings. The further it flew, the more it looked like an oval shape. The whole time, the color and translucence stayed the same. Honestly, after the whole thing happened, I thought I saw what people describe as a witch, like a ghost witch. This thing was definitely there. We saw something. The wingspan must have been about 10 to 15 feet wide. Thanks, Dolores. Wow. So this sighting, it seems to me it's more like the stories of like the trash bag Duende stories or something, the manta ray stories or, you know, these globular things that are said to live up in the high atmosphere. And every once in a while they come down just like, you know, you got these crazy oar fish that live deep, deep, deep in the ocean. And every once in a while one will die and wash up on the shore.
Yeah.
It's like, for whatever reason, this thing flew to an angel flying too close to the ground. You know what I'm saying? Like, what was this thing doing out there? And it was just changing shape like a cellophane bag or something. But it had control. So it wasn't just blowing a piece of trash in the breeze. It was actually like controlled flight. It was like the Predator too. It was like translucent, like it was cloaked.
That's so wild. It's still like that thing that my daughter and I saw.
Yeah, right.
As it rolls, it looks like you're talking about like cellophane or a tarp or something, the way it works. It's just crazy.
Yeah, like with Spawn's cape. Remember how it would just like 100%. Flow and move? Something like that. Pretty crazy.
And even the trash bag Duende stuff that we've talked about, and we've had more stories sent in where people have seen things change in shadows and into what looks like trash bags into other shadow things. How many of these things could happen around us all the time and we not notice it because it seems so minuscule? Like, you don't pay attention to something. Like, if a bag blows across in front of you, what you don't realize is, what if that's just the shape it took to get past you, right? Where you just, that's the way it's blended in.
Yeah, and I normally don't spend a lot of time looking up at the sky, to be honest. I did when I was younger, when I lived way out in the country. I had a telescope.
And you don't smoke. You have to take up smoking so you can step outside and keep looking. Yeah. That's where everybody always sees it.
Yeah,
right?
Now I just use my fume.
That's right.
But I was looking up a couple nights ago. I even texted you. Remember about the Elon Musk satellite thing?
Yeah, the Starlink.
The Starlink, you could see it come over. Now, the funny story, I don't know if I told you this, but like a month earlier, I was in Galveston. And I was sitting on the deck, and now after seeing that, I saw it. But I saw it a month earlier, but I didn't know what it was.
When it come by?
And I was like, everybody else that sees it and doesn't know what it is, they're like, is that UFOs? Like, what is that?
I have gotten so many text messages with pictures from friends here in town that first saw it and sent it to me. Like, what is this? Can y'all, all kinds of stuff. I'm like, dude, settle down. It's cool, right? It's cool. But like you said, if you were to first see it, you wouldn't know. Like, I've told the story, I think years ago, when the space station first fell out of orbit and burned up, they let that one, I watched it happen.
But you didn't know what it was.
I didn't know that's what was going on. And I panicked when I first saw it. No, I didn't go running, but just stood there seeing it. And I was like, I can't, what is that? You get a very weird, I did, a very strange feeling because you're like, is this what it would be like to see like an asteroid flying towards the planet? Like, this is it.
You just let it in. Like, it's right. over, folks.
I just stand there and watch it hit. You're like, I hope it hits me right in the face when it comes down.
You're like Sarah Connor holding onto the chain link fence.
Yes.
And the
yeah.
atomic bombs go off and you just turn to ash, then you're vaporized.
True. I hope so. That's what I hope happens. If it's going to be like that, I hope I'm at ground zero.
Instantaneous. Well, yeah, it'll be a lot less painful.
So listen to this. I got another bow hunting story. This one takes place here in Texas. Oddly enough, it involves another retired police officer. Right?
All right.
This says, I'm a 71-year-old retired officer. I've been trained to observe people and their surroundings and to relay them accurately. My first encounter was in October of 1991. I and a group of friends leased a 4,800-acre ranch in Young County, Texas. I was the only bow hunter in our group, and that allowed me to add a month to my deer season. The night before the October 1st bow season opener, I was in my tent when I was awakened around midnight by a loud screaming noise. I heard a series of three or four evenly spaced screams. It sounded like a woman in distress. At the time, it was more than 10 miles to the nearest house, and after settling down, I wrote the screams off to a mountain lion. I got up at 0300 hours and was in my stand well before daylight. I climbed up into my ladder stand, found three rocks stacked where I sit. Now, after my morning hunt, I left an apple beside the stacked rocks. I had five bow stands for different wind directions and found three stacked stones in all of them. I never heard the screams or had any problems for the next 20 years hunting that place. Fast forward to 2003. Then I was hunting a ranch 13 miles south of Seymour, Texas in late October. I was in my ladder stand well before daylight. I had a ladder stand and some timber that ran along a fence line that bordered a huge mesquite flat. The cold front that I'd been waiting for arrived half an hour or so before daylight. An intense thunderstorm broke out, so I decided to stay put as any shelter was 3 miles away. I had my rain gear on, and it was so comfortable that I fell asleep. I was sitting 15 feet above the ground and was awakened by a loud crash of thunder following a series of lightning bolts that lit up the sky bright as day. I glanced over to the right, and standing not 5 foot from me and down 5 foot or so, stood the most amazing thing that I have ever seen. It was a very hairy, very tall, and muscular human-like creature. This creature stood at least 10 feet tall and was covered in light brown and silver hair. It had a huge head sitting on vast and muscular shoulders. It had no neck, a heavy brow ridge, and defined human-like nose. The eyes were deep set with dark rings below them. It had heavy, dark eyebrows, and the whites of its eyes were coffee-colored and bloodshot. The iris of both eyes were a yellowish-green color, and the pupils were very dilated. Its face was human-like, with a full beard and little or no mustache. The lips were darker than the facial skin and were normal-sized in relation to his face. The color of the skin on the face was a medium brown, and the arms were longer than a human arm. It must have weighed at least 700 pounds. Its legs were thick and muscular, and when it exhaled, I could see his breath as the temperature had just dropped to the mid-30s in Fahrenheit. The hair covering his body was dripping water from the longer hairs. I had no idea if this thing is male or female. I do not know how long it had been there watching me. The odd thing is that I felt no fear. Just a sense of wonderment of being in the presence of this amazing creature. If this being had wanted me, it could have snatched the life out of me right then and there and no trouble. After the next lightning flash, I looked back in its direction and it was gone, and I've never seen it again. I did leave another apple on my seat in this ladder stand, and it was gone the next time that I set the stand. Now, I forgot to mention that as the sun rose, I could see that the tree I was in was covered in monarch butterflies. As the sun rose, every tree I could see for at least a half a mile down that fence line was covered in them. They left in waves of tens of thousands until the last ones left at 0930. It was a very wonderful experience. So
Seymour, Texas is not very far from here, like 100 miles northwest of us. But what I will say is near the town of Seymour runs the Brazos River. And we always talk about it on the show. The Sasquatch and around this state seem to follow the riverways, right? The waterways. Yes. Makes sense.
The place I hunted in Seymour, which is just a little north, it would be a little northwest of Seymour, not much.
But by Childress.
I wasn't even quite that far. I'm talking just like right outside of town, basically, just by a few miles. But in between Seymour and Childress, yeah. It's about 3-hour drive from the studio to get to the stand or to the place that I was hunting. And what's funny is you wouldn't know it driving through it. It's a lot of farmland, folks. There's big open farmlands, but then there's giant draws that look like tiny versions of the Grand Canyon that roll off in there. That's just rough, rugged land that lead down to those creek bottoms that a lot of it, we had places on our lease that you couldn't ride a four wheeler, and you would either have to walk it or you would have to ride a horse. And we walked the majority of it. Like there were places that you would have to, if you were going to put any feeders or you decided you wanted to do anything over there, you'd have to carry everything in there. So something to be out there does not surprise me. The interesting thing though, to me, is this person didn't feel anything like the last one.
Yeah, no, they weren't scared at all. They thought not it was like all. A beautiful encounter.
And it's just, now I do like the idea. They said there's rocks stacked there and, you know, he left an apple for him, and then 20 plus years go by before there's anything else goes down. But it's really interesting that it's watching him. It's just standing there looking at him, not hanging, you know, not doing anything crazy. And it's something that you and I've talked about. Is it because they're carrying a bow and not a gun? People have always talked about when these things notice you have a rifle, they're different.
Yeah, when they can tell you know what a rifle is. I know what you're saying, though. I've heard it. Yeah.
I don't know. But that's pretty doggone wild. Folks, if you liked these stories, stick around. I've got a few more. If you remember, not long ago, I was sharing some where military was involved in these strange encounters with Bigfoot, whether they got called in to deal with them or it took place on any base. Well, I've got some more. I've got a few more to talk about of some wild things that's happened with the military and Bigfoot. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. We're back, ready to rip. Filson, are you ready for this?
I am. All right. Love me some Bigfoot and military encounters. Who don't, right?
Why is that so much more fun?
I don't know. It reminds me of the like dog soldiers and stuff, and the guys are all facing movies, off against the werewolves and stuff. Yeah,
it's got to be the movies that lead me to want to do to talk about it.
I like to believe there's a secret program
yes.
that the military has that is designed just to eradicate Sasquatch.
Or they bring them in if there's a problem.
They're the elite of the elite. Like SEAL Team 6 ain't got nothing on this special group. This is like they bring in the 10 baddest dudes on the planet. Doesn't matter what country you're from. And they're there. They're the super secret Sasquatch killing unit.
I also like to believe that they get sent around like the Suicide Squad all around the globe to deal with like cryptids gone wild.
Yeah.
At least in my story, they do.
And then in my story, I like where the cryptids actually win. So you get to see the team slowly dismantled. I think we're giving away the plot to an excellent movie.
Yeah, or a D&D game.
Yeah, or a module. Yeah.
Listen to this. This is how it starts, folks. It says, I will describe exactly what happened before, during, and after my involvement in the incident that transpired in January of 2018. So again, my homie Lon takes care of me on these. Listen to this. It all started from my unit on January's overseas deployment 3 weeks earlier. And we were enjoying some much deserved R&R when the call came in that we were immediately to regroup at our primary operations base for an emergency action. We all assumed some vital intel had come in concerning an HVT known as high value target somewhere in a foreign theater. Looking back now, I wish that was the case, but unfortunately it wasn't. We were given a brief summary of the situation, and we were told we would all be given all the particulars once we reached our FOB, or our forward operating base, which turned out to be the Sierra Nevada Mountains. So I tell you this too, Kyle, because we're going to be talking to Mr. Moorhead before long about the Sierra Sounds. So here we go. We grabbed our gear, boarded a plane, and departed immediately. None of us knew exactly what kind of situation we were being dropped into, but it quickly became apparent when we reached the FOB that several units from various branches had been mobilized in short order. As we stood in the cluttered briefing room, none of us, neither my unit nor the others, were prepared for what we would hear. We were informed that three groups specializing in advanced mountain warfare had been running a training drill in the general vicinity when one of the teams radioed in that they could hear automatic weapons fire from one of the group's last known positions. A helo was soon dispatched to see what was happening since they weren't cleared for any kind of expenditure of ammunition that the group had reported. After an extensive air search, the helo failed to make contact with the group. It was decided that the second two groups would abandon their training mission and search for the missing group. An aerial search and rescue operation would commence immediately. The other two groups reported finding brass all over the group's base camp. Large amounts of blood and several mutilated bodies, all corroborated by the search and rescue team sent to retrieve the remains. It was decided the other two teams would track the remaining members of that group of Group 1 that evening. Both teams radioed in saying something was probing their lines and acting very aggressively. They made special mention in the transmission to say they didn't believe it to be of human origins. During the night, three more individuals went missing with no trace. It was decided to send helos up to pull them out. All 38 remaining members of Groups 3 and 4 were in another room prepared to answer any questions we might have. We spoke with them at length, plotted out the first group's last known position, and planned our movements very carefully. The six units that had been brought in would be dropped at various places throughout the range. My unit would be dropped right at the group's base camp and would track them with assistance from another unit, while two units would be job four in advance of our position and work their way back down to us. Two teams would investigate possible secure positions the group could have made their way to. The minute we were all on the ground, we all knew this was no longer a rescue, but a recovery mission, or so we thought. As we moved deeper into the Sierra Nevada mountain range, we lost all trace of the first group, just as the other two groups had. On our first night out, out there, we were met with the most god-awful noises, screams, and growls. To be exact, we had Blackhawks searching for the source of the sounds as we crept deeper and deeper into these mountains. The only words spoken were between the radio operators of the six teams and the command at the base of the mountain. For 48 hours, we searched for the lost group, never finding any trace of them. On the third night, the two teams were sent to investigate possible secure positions the group could have gone. We were given direct orders to find them, the missing group, and kill whatever it was that was taking us out.
But it sounds like somebody knows what they're going after. You know what I mean? Like if a group goes missing, say anywhere, like a bunch of teenagers were camping out around Possum Kingdom, they went missing. They wouldn't immediately just send in the army and be like, no. Hey, these people are missing, and you are ordered to kill what's responsible. You'd be like, well, what?
Somebody
knows, yeah. Right?
Somebody where they found that brass had to find something when they saw the mutilated bodies. There had to be something there tipped them
like
off.
Like they found the bodies, and they're like, oh, we know what this is.
Yeah,
exactly. We don't tell the underlings what it is, but we know.
Then they had the debriefing where they could go talk to the guys that found them and heard all of it, and they were getting probed, and they were like, what did y'all see? Right. What did you? Because they didn't come out to say we saw anything Bigfoot. Not yet. Anyway, they were just talking about something's popping off. So, yeah, somebody knows something in order to turn them loose to go in there. Right.
That's what I think.
It makes sense because it says here you go. The two teams sent ahead of us were ordered to hunker down and wait for the rest of us to regroup with them before going to look for the missing men. 9 hours later, all six teams made their way to the northwest where it was believed the two men went missing. none of us knew exactly what we were facing. Well, somebody did, as you pointed. Somebody had to know.
Yeah, because if people go missing all the time, they don't immediately send kill teams to eradicate what caused them.
They don't fly them in unless they all like, Bigfoot's attacking, we got to get them.
This isn't a typical search and rescue team.
Yeah. The entire range had an eerie quiet about it, both day and night. We all had the feeling we were being watched, yet we could find nothing when we went out looking. We knew we weren't so much the hunter as the hunted. Whatever was out there with us knew the terrain. It toyed with us for several hours, going so far as to let loose this hideous laugh.
Billy, you're not afraid of any man. Yeah. What is it?
That ain't no man, Major.
Yeah, that's exactly what that's what they're describing, right?
That's it. Yeah.
They were the hunted.
Says we caught our first break. One of the other teams came across several shredded MRE packets that were torn to pieces and what we assumed were the remains of a human thigh. MRE stand for meal ready to eat, if anybody didn't know. For some inexplicable reason, whatever this thing has left a trail leading to a small ravine. We knew it wanted us to follow it and knew it had eyes on us. So we split up into four teams. Two of us would follow the bait, while the other two would attempt to outflank it.
I would immediately cover my body head to toe in mud.
Exactly.
I would find a large tree to get up in. I would make a bow.
I would pull a large stump up, and then I would put like spikes under a limb so I could drop it on this. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm with you. That's exactly what I would do. We reached the start of the ravine just after sunset, and we waited, not daring to walk blindly into this thing's ambush. As darkness claimed the entire range, the unit attached to my unit opened up on something creeping around our left flank. We quickly spread out and fired random single shots into the forest, pushing it right into our other units waiting to catch this thing. In a classic pincer maneuver with our kill box set, we moved in only to find ourselves face to face with what I can only describe as the Sasquatch from hell. This thing stood almost 12 feet tall and as wide as an Abrams tank. Even with us going at it with everything we had, this thing fought back ferociously, killing an additional four men before finally going down. We didn't let up. We put our 203s to work, launching enough HP to melt this thing to pieces.
Now, a 203 is an M4 rifle with a grenade launcher underneath.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. I'd like to own one, but the ATF won't allow it.
Yeah, they frown on that, right? They frown on that a little bit. Once we reported back that this thing was dead, two Blackhawks packed with guys in bio suits showed up, took possession of what remains were left, and we were all picked up and flown back to the FOB. Once there, we were given specific orders to never discuss what happened and return to our individual commands. None of the guys in my unit has gotten much sleep since then, truth be told, and we take hunting terrorists over that thing any day of the week. During my 18-plus year military career, I've seen some strange occurrences, but this was by far the strangest. So they called them in because one giant... So, look.
I'd like to know if this is real, though. I'm not saying it's not.
It's real.
I'd like to know.
It's real.
It's a crazy story, but look, it's not the first time I've heard a similar story.
So let me ask you this.
Sure.
Do you think Bigfoot could come down with CWD? Do you think that that might affect him? Or do you think that there's... My question is this. Could we pass something on to Bigfoot? Let's say maybe this big son of a gun really wasn't that evil, wasn't doing what, and then somehow got... CWD, got some sort of disease. Something has happened to drive it that way. Maybe that's what happened when it gets old. It got some sort of Bigfoot dementia, and then it just went into a rage and went to killing folks.
I mean, it's as good a theory as any other.
Right?
Why is there two different camps when it comes to Bigfoot, though? On one group, he's a nice, tree-hugging, happy guy, likes to play with butterflies, he smells flowers, he enjoys it.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, he's a marauding, murdering creature that if you get in his territory, it's over for you. You're dead.
I like to believe that people can be asses in real life, and there's real ass Bigfoots too. Like, there can be Bigfoot that are cool and Bigfoot that are real asses.
Well, maybe those people were doing something to antagonize them.
Yeah, they were spraying brass at them, right? They were lighting it up.
No, no, the first guys, the guys that went missing. That's the
dudes he killed all of them guys?
They went in there. Yeah, maybe they were insulting. Maybe they were poking fun.
Maybe it was during breeding season, and he thought they were encroaching or something like that. Like, you don't know. Like, nothing like, you've seen the moose when they run people down out there like that. Imagine Bigfeet's doing it.
Yeah.
And look, again, it's in the Sierra Nevadas. I buy it. Why do I buy it in the Nevada? Because it's a rough, rugged part of this world.
Yeah, for that's whatever reason, it makes it seem more plausible there than other places.
I'm going to toss you one into a California national park where some Marines got in a little trouble. It says, I've feared the repercussions of divulging this story for well over 20 years, even after my discharge from active service. We were told the penalty would be without mercy. It was considered sensitive, classified information. In August of 1995, my U.S. Marine platoon was conducting our third counter-narcotic JTF operation in a pre-selective national forest in California, in a location I will keep secret. The past two summers yielded solid results with the identification and eventual eradication of several big-dollar marijuana grows in two different national forests. Federal law prohibits the military from acting as a police force. We were armed, but we were not allowed to engage or make arrests. Our job was to covertly insert into pre-designated areas chosen because of their remoteness and prior activity, and from gathered intelligence of Mexican cartel informants who had knowledge of growth sites in and around this particular national forest. Our job was to find a water source, follow it, look for signs, and locate any growth sites, then set up an observation post and gather intelligence and monitor activity until the state and local law enforcement made the bust. We're only allowed to use deadly force if our lives were physically threatened, and even then, it would be a slippery slope, even if they spotted us and confronted us. We would insert wearing civilian clothes and posing as hikers or campers. I'm going to stop right there because that sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
You got to go in there and play pretend with guys that are looking to kill you if they see you.
Yeah, but I guess their thought process is these narcos would be less likely to kill just a hiker than if somebody that's
100%.
In fatigues, you know?
Oh,
but
yeah,
still,
100%.
It's definitely dangerous. I mean, I remember a couple years ago, I was talking to like a park ranger, a forest ranger, you know, Texas Parks and Wildlife, and they were talking about how over the last couple of years, they would never find these illegal grows, but over the last couple of years, they've found more and more of them. So it's crazy, crazy to think that they're, you always think of it being shipped over from Mexico to here, but they're actually growing it here.
So much easier to sneak in and grow it under everybody's nose right there in those national forests.
Yeah.
You know, even though I know it's less likely, that's still not a chance that I'm willing to take, is to dress up like an unarmed hiker or what. And of course, I'm sure they're armed. You just can't see it and traipse around out there. But listen to this. It says, we were in four-man teams on three-day patrols. I and my assistant team leader carry shotguns and 9mm. The two junior Marines carried M16A2s. We had thermals, GPSs, compass, map, and protractors. We had a radio and a sat phone. We carried water filtration pumps and fire tents because of the threat of forest fires that year, because it was a very dry summer. We did not carry a lot of ammunition. Our goal was not to be seen or get out of Dodge as quick as possible after finding the stream, which ended up being a trickle due to drought. We pressed on for about 2 hours. We walked in the stream bed, walking on each side. We're near vertical 50-foot walls around. We navigated around an extremely wide curve in the stream that was on point, and as I came around a giant boulder in the middle of the stream bed, I saw directly in front of me brown fur and large claws.
It's a bear.
Good chance, right? I raised my weapon, which alerted the rest of the team, and it was a bear.
Yeah.
A dead bear, lying on his stomach with his head nearly ripped off, twisted so it was facing up towards the sky, his four limbs draped over the sides of the flat, elevated rock in the stream.
Now, if you saw that, what would you first think? I'd think another boar.
I think another bear.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Another boar, but bear, a male bear would beat that one up. Because what else in the forest can do that to a bear?
Yeah, not much. not much at all is going to do that. But the idea of it twisting its head, right? And the way it lays it out. Like if a bear mauls another one, it's just, they're going to eat the soft parts. That's how they do it. Everything the bear, a bear eats you while you're still alive.
Mm-hmm.
At least the cat has the common courtesy to kill you, right? Not a bear.
Yeah, a bear's like a big dog.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and listen, it goes on to say that it had large chunks of meat torn out along the sides of its spine and a gut pile. It was back a straps. Gruesome sight. Well, here's the thing. Bear, another bear is going to eat the guts. That's what they're going for. They're not looking for backstrap. They're looking for guts, as much nutrient as they can get.
Sasquatch likes him a backstrap.
That's right. He likes a little bear jerky. Says, I didn't understand what I was looking at. We took defensive positions because my only thought was poachers are Mexican growers looking for fresh meat after spending several months tending and guarding a grow site. My assistant, a Native American from the Navajo Nation in New Mexico, was the first to spot two sets of gigantic bear-toed footprints in the damp soil around the stream bed. We followed them to the edge of the western side of the stream, and they went straight up the vertical wall to the top. A person would need climbing gear to achieve that ascent. No ropes, no gear, just disturbed dirt and rock from where they climbed straight up. We heard no one running, no climbing, no rocks falling, just dead silence. A terrifying feeling of dread came over the team. My assistant looked very concerned. To make matters worse, I asked him what the hell was going on, and he said, "That ain't no man, Major." He said, "This ain't good, boss." The footprints were enormous. One set was clearly bigger than the other. I said to my assistant, "Why are they barefoot?" I still didn't get it. He suggested we reroute and change directions. He said we were somewhere where we shouldn't be, and we're asking for trouble. He said there were wild men, and this was their kill and their land, and they're probably watching us as we speak. I looked dumbfounded and clueless, and he whispered in my ear so the other two junior guys wouldn't hear and freak out, "Sasquatch." But he called them something else, and for the life of me, I can't remember. It was something in his native tongue. I felt like something was watching us now, or was it my imagination? The air in the woods had changed. The woods got quiet. I heard no birds, no crickets. Even the mosquitoes had stopped biting. I had an area of operation to recon and a mission to accomplish. If I had radioed in that we were altering our route and told them why, I would have been relieved of my responsibility and embarrassed in front of the entire platoon. I said, "We're moving out. Let's pick up the pace and get to our next checkpoint before 1600. As we move to our next checkpoint, I remember smelling the overpowering stench of rotting garbage. It was intense. It seemed to be everywhere. It was pungent to the point it almost made me sick. But then, it just went away as quick as it came. Things remained tense and uncertain. But when we discovered empty bags of fertilizer and several yards of gardening hose along the edge of the stream bed, it altered us to the possibility of a grow site. And soon we forgot all about the weirdness that had just happened. We followed the hose down from the stream onto a game trail and into a clearing about 200 yards off. That was when we first smelled the unmistakable skunky aroma of the marijuana. We could all see bits of fluorescent material through the trees, which we assumed was a tent. So we have a grow site. We did our reconnaissance of 360 degrees around, and we found an ideal overwatch position on an elevated plateau about 75 yards from the grower's camp. We also spotted the pot field. I estimated at least 300 to 500 plants. We radioed everything in and set up our listening and observation post. Now, the crazy thing was that there were no growers. And we heard not a sound from the appearance of the camp. It seemed unusually unkept, almost abandoned. Something didn't add up. Did they spot us? Did they make a run for it, even though these sites were cartel-owned? These sites were usually operated by poor farmers smuggled into the woods with minimal supplies and tasked with living the entire growing season in the woods until harvest. After examining the camp and tying up some loose ends, we kind of determined it had been abandoned for some time. But we had to assume they'd be back or were still in the area. So around midnight, I completed my 2-hour security shift and fell asleep almost immediately. While sleeping, I remember hearing my guys speaking nervously, scared and confused, arguing and contemplating. I thought it was a dream, but in reality, they had a situation unfolding less than an hour after falling asleep. I awoke to a blood-curdling scream that punched me right in the gut. I woke to three panicked Marines with the most terrified expressions I've ever seen on grown men. I ask in my most aggravated, half-asleep, angry voice, "Who in the hell's been screaming?" I thought our cover was blown and the operation was a wash. Their mouths hung open without a single word muttered. I heard the scream again. I've never heard anything like this. It was deep and guttural. It went through you like a sonic boom. It was like a woman screaming, but deeper and louder. The garbage odor got stronger, like we were lying in it. My assistant said 12 o'clock movement. I got my weapon and grabbed the night vision. After fumbling around with the goggles, I managed to get them turned on and put them over my face. Now we had to scan for a couple seconds. I had a heat source almost immediately, and it was huge. I thought bear, but it walked from behind the tree, then crouched down real stealthy, then down on all fours behind the growers' tents. I knew it was no bear. It kept raising up, peeking from behind the two tents. The growers' tents were set up side by side. It obviously didn't account for us having night vision, and it stood up straight. There was no moon, and it was pitch black out, and I could see it fully. I estimate this thing at 10 feet, and maybe 5 foot across, with long, lanky arms and no neck. I can still remember how long its arms were in relation to its body. It was not proportional at all. It started growling, and it still didn't sink in what I was looking at. The growling was deep and continuous, so I yelled at it. It immediately squatted back down behind the tents like it was thinking to itself, "Oh, they see me." Then, just like that, an explosion. It came crashing through the tents and charging straight at us. The other three Marines were fumbling around in the dark for their flashlights. We were still grouped, but everyone was looking for gear and weapons. I chambered a shell and remembered the distinct sound of the M16 charging handle to the left of me sliding home. At least we had two weapons on it. I dropped the night vision. I did not strap them to my face. Instead, I held them there. But as I drew my weapon, I let them go. I told my assistant to grab the night vision down by my knees somewhere. The only way we could see this freight train coming at us was because it had crashed through the tents. One of the tents got hung up on it, and it was being carried around as it was charging. It charged maybe 25 to 30 yards before it made a hard left and straight into the tree line. It must have snared the hijacked tent, and the tent was now hung up in a tree about 8 foot off the ground. It didn't go far into the woods. The crashing and snapping lasted about 3 seconds and stopped. It was still close. It started growling again, and the volume would go up and down, up and down. The panic hitting us all hard. I was starting to worry about one of my guys discharging his weapon and shooting one of us accidentally. I called up their names and where their positions were in relation to mine. It was so dark and so confusing. I wanted all of us elbow to elbow and accounted for with weapons pointed in a safe direction and not at the back of my head. This creature started making a different noise now, like a chattering Chinese-type language followed by an occasional whoop, then a 20-second growl, and then back to the weird chattering.
What does that sound like?
Uh-huh, exactly.
The Sierra sounds.
Exactly. It was so odd, terrifying, and unreal all at the same time. I was trying to keep myself together. I wanted to gain accountability and control and make sure I was making good decisions, even with a monster 50 yards to my 3 o'clock. I was still worried about the consequences brought forth by my command or making a bad decision. We heard a loud crack followed by a second or third crack, and then the unmistakable sound of a tree falling. It had dropped a huge tree with ease. It crashed down with a thud into the camp area about 50 yards from us. I asked for the radio so I could inform the command of the situation. So one of my Marines was fumbling around, locating, or trying to, this radio. My eyes were glued on the area from where the tree had fallen. I couldn't even blink. I was absolutely terrified. Again, I asked for the radio. We had two weapons on this thing at 3 o'clock. My assistant was scanning with the night vision, and the fourth Marine was now trying to reach someone on the radio. The last radio check was 2,200 hours, and we were doing four-hour comm checks. He managed to get someone on the radio, but the signal was garbled. He kept repeating that there was something attacking us and that we needed help. They asked to speak with the TL, actually me. I stuck out my left hand, grabbed the radio, and informed command we had unknown hostiles probing our observation post. I didn't know what to say. They asked about numbers and weapons and visual identification. I told them unknown, but we need the rapid response team and an emergency evac immediately. Just then a scream comes from our 6 o'clock. It was a similar scream to the first, but this one was closer. We had abandoned situation awareness and forgot about covering the 6. We couldn't see the second one, nor can we hear anything other than the initial scream. The one on our 3 o'clock started moving as it rounded our position, making its way to 6 o'clock from where the second scream came from. I turned on my mag light that was attached to the barrel of my shotgun and followed this thing as it ran on all fours like a chimpanzee. It moved with such speed and agility, and it just plowed everything in its way into the ground. For the first time I saw it, it looked brownish red, and it was immense. It had huge, thick legs and massive shoulders. You could hear the impacts on the ground every time it advanced. The speed was incomprehensible. It got from point A to point B in less than 10 seconds. It was now 50 yards towards 6 o'clock behind a group of large fir trees. We could hear its breathing with massive lungs and a massive chest. "Can we shoot, Sergeant?" one of my Marines asked. I said, "No, hold your fire, Lieutenant." Command wanted me to move on the radio, but I couldn't. It began chattering again. I raised my shotgun with the mag light still on and made eye contact with this monster peering up from behind the fir tree. It snarled at me and began growling. Its hair had twigs and leaves in it. It had patches of bare skin, like it had the mange. It had no neck and huge black eyes. The jaw muscles on each side of its face were huge. It was the biggest thing I'd ever seen, and it started growling. A different growl joined in. I raised the gun higher and followed the center of the tree up towards the top. And there it was, the second one. It had climbed this fir tree, and it was about 75 foot in the air. It managed to get behind us and climb a tree without a sound. All military discipline had gone out the window. We all had flashlights turned on. We're all yelling at each other and at these beings. One of my Marines was yelling, "Get out of here." Another one kept saying, "What is it? What is it?" I ordered everyone to gather their gear, get on their backpacks, and we backed up into the main campsite area, trying to put a little more distance between us and these things. I ordered to gather as much wood as possible. There was a lot laying around from the fallen tree. This tree, the creature fell, was dead and broken into hundreds of pieces. They were strewn about. I started a campfire, which was probably a terrible idea given the fire conditions that summer, and it's the last thing Marines would do on a real-life nighttime operation. But this was no ordinary operation or no ordinary mission. It was just so dark, and I was hoping the extra light in the side of a fire would sway these things from advancing any further. I truly feel they're engaging us, looking for a weakness or an opening. The large one stayed put as the second one would pace out to its left and right. Its head kept jerking around like it was viewing us from multiple angles. It was terrifying how it jerked its head around, never taking its eyes off us. It came down from the tree in less than 2 seconds. It was faster than a chipmunk and 100 times the size. At this time, help was about 2 hours away, and they were going to meet us about a mile north on an old forestry road that where we had found on the map. When they were 1 hour out, that's when we would make our move and head north to meet up with my unit. It was fairly even terrain and had no major obstacles. Back and forth communication with my unit command only created more confusion for everyone involved. If I were them, I'd be thinking the same thing, that these guys are crazy. We made our move out of the campsite. We heard them follow. We left the fire going, and I remember thinking to myself, I hope I didn't just start a forest fire. But the lingering fire gave us the courage to venture into the dark woods. My assistant was an ace at land nav, and I took up the rear with the night vision now properly strapped on my face. I thought about a warning shot or two, but even that would exact a severe penalty for discharging live rounds in a national forest without a legitimate reason. Even though we had no reason, or even though we had a reason, it would have landed me in the NJP. I had weapons, but I might as well have been unarmed. Using them would have gotten us in trouble, and I would have only angered these beings because anything short of a 50 caliber round would probably only aggravate them more. They were that big. They didn't harass us much on our trek out. I figured it would have been a prime opportunity for them to make a move, but they kept their distance. But we were still close enough that the pungent smell of rotting trash hung in the air, and at one point one of them advanced out in front of our left flank and held its position as we passed. We eventually met up with the response team. My platoon sergeant was angry and full of questions, but as these beings made their presence known, he relented. In a way, I was glad these things followed us, because I highly doubt that they would have believed us. Who would? They arrived in two SUVs and an 8-passenger van as these things screamed and broke limbs. My platoon sergeant acted unusually calm and accounted for everyone and all their equipment and weapons. He would occasionally look in their direction, but made no inquiries about what these things were. He was very calm and cool combat veteran and wanted to get good accountability for personnel and equipment. Ask questions later. The response team members set up a perimeter and I could hear them asking amongst themselves, what the hell are we looking at? Even during a Bigfoot encounter, we were professionals and it was done by the book. Several Marines kept their weapons out, the ready round in the chamber, but I had unloaded and made safe mine along with the rest of my team. I made sure all of my guys got or go to the van before I entered. The platoon sergeant rounded out the response team, and they began to load up into the SUVs. I finally heard the platoon sergeant ask another sergeant, what the hell is going on here? We drove out into one of the blackest, darkest nights I've ever seen. All of a sudden, a huge rock smashed through the front windshield of the lead SUV. The driver cut the wheel hard left, and they ended up rolling down a small hill. The vehicle ended up on its side again. Every Marine present exited the vehicles and set up a defensive perimeter around the downed SUV. One Marine received a broken collarbone and minor concussion. Now things got real. At this point, the sheriff and forestry departments were en route to our location. National Guard Blackhawks were on standby for the entire month of operations, and they dispatched one chopper to provide aerial security. We were to remain in place, maintain 100 security, and wait for the daylight. By 7 a.m., the cavalry had arrived, and we were finally on our way out of this forest. I'd never talked about this incident amongst ourselves. The terrified look on some of these guys' faces is still burned into my memory. The sounds and smells I experienced that night, along with the terrifying looks of these beings, will be burned with me until the day I die.
Wow.
So there you go.
Now that, sir.
There you go.
It's a story.
That is a heck of a story, right?
At first, before, I didn't want to interrupt you.
Yeah.
I know I do all the time, but before, at first, there was a documentary a couple years ago called Sasquatch, but in reality, it was guys pretending to be Sasquatch to keep them away from their grow.
The drug, yes.
So when you were telling the stories about the signs, I thought possibly that's what this was, another one of these stories. But then, of course, they actually saw them.
Well, when they went in, when he starts talking about it, when you go into the night vision where you can see them in thermal, that's when you're like, wait a minute. But this brings up a point. I tell you what. Folks, we're rocking along. Let's take a quick break. When we come back from this, we'll wrap this up. I'll run another little small story past you that's pretty interesting, and then we'll discuss this more. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. All right. Here we go. We'll do this again. This is something that you have pointed out multiple times as we talk about going into the woods and all that is, why can't we just send like night vision drones, thermal drones up to try to find them or more? Because it seems to be, you can hide like that, but you're going to have to do a lot of it in the wood. We need some long range thermal imaging to set up these little spots to try to keep an eye on them would be the only way that we're going to catch them.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm talking about. Like, I want to do it from a satellite. Like, yeah. I don't want to be in the woods with them. I want to do it from a distance, right? Why can't we do that?
So you've worn nods before and all that and seen through thermal and seen how all that stuff works. Could you imagine how terrifying it would be to be trying to assess the situation that you can only see through those?
No, I can't.
That would be absolutely horrifying, would it not?
Yeah, because when you watch it on a movie, it's not really like that. Like,
oh,
in
it's
real
not
life,
like that at all.
You can't. It's a weird feeling. Your perception is off big time. It's.
Well, you've got blinders on. Well, especially at night with the thermal. The thermals don't work anything like your vision does. You want to see what it's like? Take a pair of binoculars and hold them up, and then just imagine looking around those with no magnification. That's all you're going to see is that little bitty bit. Total darkness. Yeah, it would drive you bananas. Bananas. That's a terrifying encounter. And again, like we've discussed, I want to know how many of those have happened in the States. And that's something that just doesn't get talked about. And again, if they're not flesh and blood creatures, or are they only flesh and blood? Like, are they some sort of dimensional shifters? And when they're in this dimension, they're flesh and blood, but they can also slip into another one. There's so many. It brings up so many questions. But again, it's like some of these guys seem like they are comfortable with it. Like they know, like they're aware. That's another disturbing thing about it. But the one story I wanted to give before we wrap this bad boy up. Here in Texas, there's always been talks of jackalopes,
yeah.
Right? We always hear the jackalope story, which is a jackrabbit with antlers, folks. Looks like the antlers out of a deer on a rabbit. And if you've never seen a jackalope, look it up. Listen to this story from a military vet that was in Antola, Turkey. It says, greetings. Well, the jackalope phenomenon isn't mythical, and it's not extinct either. I wished I'd had a camera, but I am in Turkey at the moment, and I was driving down a treacherous mountain road a few nights ago, and I was only going about 30 kilometers when something came down the hill into the road. I at first thought it was a rock, so I slammed on the brakes, and then it hit my headlights. I had never heard of these before. The most fascinating creature I had ever seen. So naturally, I was quite curious about what kind of animal it was. It was probably 3 feet tall at the back. It ran like a dog, but looked like a rabbit. It had a miniature antler rack on its head that would make the biggest and most majestic buck jealous. I got home and decided to look this thing up on the internet. I was wondering if they were strictly found in this region of the world, only to be met with an onslaught of it's fake, legends, myths, and cryptozoological fakes. And one collaboration site sort of said this site claimed that all horns grown on a rabbit are cancerous and not calcium. They say that this is a tumorous material instead. Whilst this site is correct about cancer-causing tumors, the tumors are always misshapen, saggy, and pathetic-looking. What I saw were definitely regal-looking calcified antlers. So I guess that I am officially one of the nutcases and embellished storytellers, but I know what I saw. I saw it clearly. Nothing in my way, not a foggy night. It was very clear and very well lit up in my headlights. Ronnie.
Do you think it's a real flesh and blood creature, or do you think this is almost like thought form or like a tulpa where like group thinking of this mythical creature as actually manifested a real being? You know what I'm saying? Like jackalopes, you've heard, you're teased about that when you're a kid.
Yeah.
How could the guy see a real one? There's no scientific creature to ever have existed that was a jackrabbit with antlers.
Yeah.
Like it just doesn't exist. It's not real. But yet this guy saw one crossing the road.
Well, and I also wonder, like,
was he just really tired?
It gives me so many questions because of that. So I don't know, right? I don't want to say the guy didn't see what he saw, and I don't want to say he did.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying.
I don't know. Could he have misidentified something on its head? Could it have been, I don't know about, you know, tumbleweeds in Turkey, but I'm assuming they got them. Could there have been something on its head, between its ears, something that looked, jackrabbits look huge. They're not 3 foot at the shoulder like he's, but jackrabbits do look huge. I don't know. I mean, just the way he was talking about the size of this thing that ran like that. I don't know. I don't know what this thing could have possibly been.
You need to talk to Dr. Stepich. He claims he's got the biggest jackrabbit on the planet at his house.
I've got some photographs of me holding some big ones that I'd sent to the light with my compound bow way back in the day. Like some big ones.
He's got a big one, he claims, out there. He tells me about it every time I see him.
We're going to have to go check this thing out. Before we go, folks, I have one more thing to run past you. And this is a specialty thing, a deal about Bigfoot. Again, this is a different angle that I want to hit y'all with in closing. It says it was a hot day in 2000, summer day. In 2016, and I was hunting for ginseng close to the Oak Ridge National Laboratory in Tennessee. I spent most of the days on my knees digging. About 20 minutes until night, I decided to leave, and that's when I heard the loudest screaming and yelling that I've ever heard in my life. We have black panthers here in the New River and Oak Ridge. We also have black bears, mountain lions, and massive old hogs. But this was nothing I'd ever heard. I felt it in my soul. I tried to run, but I couldn't move. It's like I was in shock, like I had just been through a shooting or a bad wreck. I was stunned. I finally made it back to my car, only to be greeted by soldiers with assault weapons. They were chasing something, and they thought it was me. They quickly realized I was not as big as what they were after. My family's from the Big Mountains. We can all walk into Kentucky from Tennessee. I've been in these woods since I was 3 years old. Cherokee Irish descent. I've been aware of and taught about the hairy people. My family stories were passed down to me, and I always leave them alone. They won't bother you, but the bad ones live alone and will take our women and children. My Uncle Jose, who's deceased, ran the security at the Y-12 National Security Complex, and he said that they had killed three or four every year trying to get into the plant. The old timers used to tell us about the time one of the hairy people came into the holler and tried to snatch up a woman. They shot it 6 times and it just stood there, grabbed the girl and left. And they never saw her again. Every week, a boulder or a tree would crash through his cabin at night, and this went on for a year until they finally moved. Once, I was hunting ginseng, and then I had just gotten this overwhelming fear come over me like somebody's watching me. I got up, looked around, and out of nowhere, this head pops up from around this huge maple tree just staring right at me. I literally wet my pants right there. I was frozen in fear. I ran almost like I was in slow motion to the car. It was running behind me throwing rocks. I swear, I've never been that scared in my entire life. So, this is a story about a national laboratory security firm that was putting them down. Right. So, again, we think about the military. Think about the private security firms, stuff like that. It never even dreamed on me the fact that what if private groups like that, mm-hmm. it's like they're in Tennessee, they're coming down, they're tearing stuff. You shoot one. What do you do with it? It's just exactly
you take it back to the lab.
But you dispose of it.
Just perform tests on it.
Yeah, because just like we've heard where guys would destroy dinosaur bones that they uncovered on job sites, not to slow down the job site.
Right.
Would you want to be the one? Your company has shot a Bigfoot, multiples. Now they descend on you. Now everything going on around that whole, now that entire area is under national forest protection for endangered species, everything.
You'd get protesters. You'd get Bigfoot Lives Matter or whatever. There'd be all these groups that would form. They'd protest. Just like
they shut it all down.
The logging industry is famous for talking about like rare birds and things like that. They do not
the
mention
owls,
it.
We've talked about it with the thylacine.
Same thing with the thylacine. Yeah. Exactly the same thing.
So think about the number of these animals that might have been killed, the number of these Sasquatch that might have been shot and disposed of by other companies. Like that's what this thing sounds like is it doesn't want to know. It doesn't care. You shoot it and get rid of it. We don't care.
Yeah.
So, look, there's been a lot of wild encounters, and it seems like there's a lot more. There are people out there that know a lot more than they're sharing. So I hope one day we get maybe somebody comes forward with a lot more information. We finally get to the bottom of this Bigfoot stuff. But who knows?
Man, I like the stories either way. If you have any cool stories like this you'd like to share with me and Kim as well as the listeners, don't hesitate. Email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Word. You can call the show, 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD. Let's not forget about our wonderful sponsors. Stopping is something we all put off because it's hard, but switching to Fume is easy, enjoyable, and even fun. Join Fume in accelerating humanity's breakup from destructive habits by picking up the Journey Pack today. Head to tryfume.com and use the code EXPANDED, that's EXPANDED, to save 10% off when you get the Journey Pack today. That's tryfume.com and use the code EXPANDED to save an additional 10% off your order today. Also, Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use the code EXPANDED to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. I'll put links in the show notes, but that's it. Pretty good. And also AG1.
If y'all want to take ownership of your health, folks, you got to do what me and Kyle do. You got to try AG1. And if you want to give it a run, you're going to get a free one-year supply of vitamin D and five free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Super simple. Go to drinkag1.com/expanded, E-X-P-A-N-D-E-D. drinkag1.com/expanded, folks. Check it out.
Also, don't forget September 2nd and 3rd, me and Cam will be at the Paranormal Roundtable's second annual Dogman Encrypted Conference. You need to get your tickets now, folks. You got to
hang out.
You got to go. You need to go. You're going to be excellent speakers there, like Josh Turner, Christopher Garantano, Lyle Blackburn, Nick Redfern. Like Cam said, Ron Moorhead. We got a lot of people that's going to be there. It's going to be fun. Me and Cam are going to be there. We hope you're there too. It's in White Settlement, Texas, basically west side of Fort Worth. I can't wait.
You're going to be out and about and you're going to be at ReaperCon on the 31st of this month, we're going to be there.
Yeah, that's up in Denton, Texas.
Yeah, we're going to be kicking around there. We're not going to be talking or doing anything. We're going to be out there trying to find minis and buy crazy tabletop books, and we're just going to be having a good time, us and a whole bunch. So
yeah. Sounds like fun. I hope everybody out there has a good week. Till next time, that's about all the time we have on this show. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.